Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Heeding the call of the wild, even if it's from the cat in the kitchen. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This piece is part of an ancient trend of artists finding inspiration in animals. Today we'll hear about a new exhibition exploring the relationship between artists, poets, musicians, and their creature companions. Also today, baritone Thomas Hampson brings Macbeth to the stage at the Metropolitan Opera. But we begin the second part of our two-day series on art and animals by looking to the Morgan Library and Museum, where they have a new exhibit called In the Company of Animals. The exhibition's curator is Clara Drummond. She joins us in the studio. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So yesterday, you know, we were talking with Bernie Krause, naturalist and composer, and he was saying how, you know, his theory is that the earliest form of human music was humans imitating the sounds of animals around them.
Right.
Do you see that mimicry across the human arts?
I think, I mean, for sure, animals have been, since, you know, the earliest cave paintings, a kind of influence on human artistic endeavor and the creative process. And I think there's always been an interest. I mean, in art, there's been an interest in, like, the form of the animal as opposed to the human form. You know, mm-hmm. there's something beautiful about and in literature, same thing. I think birds have definitely had an influence on the rhythms of poetry and just the so, I think it goes so far back to beginning of humans and our, you know, living on this earth with animals. We can't escape them.
And you think of the, you know, the paintings, the cave paintings in Lascaux and the other caves in the south of France, and it's all like horses and bison and stuff like that. But is it just horses and bison, or, you know, what do we learn about ourselves?
Well, that's one thing that's the big question of the exhibition, thinking about this relationship with animals and what it reveals about us in it. I think for me, and especially looking at animals in art, because one of the ideas of the exhibition is that animals are everywhere, so not just in art, they're in our lives. And I remember when I moved to New York, I was thought, you know, well, that's the end of ever seeing animals, but even in New York, they are everywhere. But that's the argument of the show, really, that it really is fun to, it's an interest in animals, but it really is about sort of the most human things, like the human questions, like what it is to be good, what is beauty, you know, what it is to have relationships with other creatures, whether animals or human. So, you know, those are, yeah, it's the question of the exhibition. I'm not sure I have an answer, but it's what I'm interested in asking, what it is about ourselves that is revealed in this close relationship with animals.
So. Well, sometimes, you know, an exhibition is successful if it just asks the right question.
Yeah, that's always been the most interesting part to me, is like put some questions out there. Because there's also so much art and music. I mean, you could fill 100 rooms in an exhibition. So it's just a starting point.
The exhibition's called In the Company of Animals. It's showing at the Morgan Library and Museum through May 20th. And we've got a slideshow of images from the exhibition on the Soundcheck page. You can check it out now at wnyc.org/soundcheck. And in addition to, you know, paintings and illustrations, you also have some poetry and some musical scores.
Yes.
Including Haydn's Creation. Why?
Yes. Well, Haydn's Creation was very interesting to me. Well, first of all, the Morgan has a fantastic music manuscript and printed music collection. But I wanted to find instances of musical scores printed in manuscripts where there were sort of different animals were serving different functions, because that's really one of the ideas of the show. I look at animals as symbols, animals as moral teachers, animals as muses. So the Haydn's interesting because in the creation, he's, you know, in music describing the creation of the world, so the creation of the beast, the creation of man. And it's an interesting attempt to depict in music that it really is mostly about the movement of the animals. So he's how to depict, he's, you know, there's a tiger, a stag, then a cow, even a worm. So, you know, it's again, how do you depict animals in music. And I put that in the symbol section because, you know, music is symbolic. Mm-hmm. You know, you have notes that represent tones. But in this case, it wants to be extra symbolic and, you know, describe something that's not musical, particularly in music.
So. And of course, music becomes a little less symbolic and more tactile when actual musicians are playing
right.
those notes on the page.
Exactly.
In this case, it's Robert Shaw and the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, a little bit of Haydn's Creation.
Command, unnumbered living creatures in perfect forms and fully grown. Triumphant roaring stands the lion there. Lightning leap, the tiger appears. Running with branching head, the nimble stag. Snorting and stamping, flying mane, uprears in might, a noble steed.
Just a little bit from Haydn's Creation, Robert Shaw conducting the Atlanta Symphony, and we're speaking with Clara Drummond. She's curating this exhibit in the company of animals at the Morgan Library and Museum here in New York. So it's not just in the text, it's in the music too,
exactly.
You know, the tiger leaps and then the music sort
leaps,
of leaps.
Yeah, there's like ascending runs.
The stag bounding
exactly.
And then the music, you know,
the staccatos
following
of
suit.
The stag, exactly.
Yeah.
So really, yeah, an attempt to get at that movement.
So what is the oldest piece in the exhibit? You don't have the Lascaux cave paintings.
No,
how far back do you go?
We go quite far back. The oldest piece is a Near Eastern cylinder seal from Mesopotamia, present-day Iraq, from 3100 BC, approximately.
Wow.
And the Morgan has a fantastic collection of these Near Eastern seals.
Now, what is a cylinder seal? That would have been used to like, in wax to create
it's, a... You would have rolled it over clay. Mm-hmm. It really was a circle, and there was carved, like, a picture story around that. You would have rolled it over wet clay. And then the wet clay was used... I mean, again, it's kind of mysterious in many ways, but used for various things. You could latch, like, a container with it. You could latch a door, fold... The cylinder seals themselves could be worn as jewelry if they mm-hmm. were pierced. So they had many different functions. But animals are all over the cylinder seals, as you would expect. You know, they have to do with mythology and gods. And in the cylinder seal on view, there is a one-eyed hero battling various lions.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot. And again, the lion's symbolic of the chaos of the natural world, and the hero in dominating them, you know, shows his legendary strength. So
again, it's not just horses and bison, you know, these animals represent something.
Right, exactly. These have a very specific symbolic meaning.
Mm-hmm. And what is the most recent piece in the exhibition?
The most recent is actually a Jim Dine drawing called Blind Owl. That's also in the symbolics section. And he says that the owl represents the goddess of Athena. The fact that it's blind is surely a comment.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a very recent piece that I love by David Hockney, a drawing of his two dogs, Stanley and Bougie, his dachshunds. They're again curled up on a cushion, and he says you know, for him they're his friends, and he doesn't apologize for drawing them in any way. They're as important as a mother or a lover. So
in this case, the dogs are simply dogs.
They are simply dogs. Yeah, yeah. They're just companions. I have a whole section on companions to artists and writers, and so.
So the idea of, you know, art and animals, as we've already talked about, you know, is as ancient as art itself, as near as we know.
Exactly.
And musicians especially seem to have been drawn over the centuries to birds.
Right.
And the Alaska-based composer John Luther Adams is a sort of contemporary, you know, extension of that tradition. This piece is called, for reasons that will become immediately evident, Wood Thrush.
Thank you.
That's John Luther Adams from a collection of pieces called Songbird Songs, and that one is called Wood Thrush. And Clara Drummond, who's curating In the Company of Animals, the exhibition at the Morgan Library and Museum here in New York, pretty clear that that is, you know, an effort to kind of portray these birds.
Yeah, transcribe. It's great. Because I've heard it's notorious. Again, I've never done this, but it can be notoriously difficult to transcribe in music. Because birdsong is actually so complicated when you break it down into the actual sounds and rhythms. Mm. So, yeah, that was
And
beautiful.
Yet we have classical composers going back to Clement Joncan in the medieval times who've done just
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And specific birds are, you know, cuckoos or and nightingales.
Right,
Beethoven
right.
Are
Mozart
popular.
And Stravinsky,
exactly,
respectively.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you were putting this exhibition together and you're going through all this poetry, these music scores, the paintings and illustrations, any fun facts come out in your research?
Well, in terms of music, one funny anecdote I read about, again, and you never know if how much of these are legend as opposed to fact, but there was...
But if it's a good story, share.
Right, exactly. there was a story that Wagner, when he... And I don't have a Wagner manuscript, but I read about the fact that he had a dog he was so attached to that he couldn't compose unless the dog was sitting next to him. And
yeah,
to
that
the point
sounds
where,
like Wagner.
Yeah. And he would ask for the dog to be brought in, and he would also gauge, he would, you know, play something for the dog, and if the dog... And then he would see what the expression... You know, however the dog reacted. I'm not sure you want your dog judging your music, but I guess it worked for him. So, and there's, I mean, there's a, there's a T.S. Eliot first edition on view of The Practical Cats, which of his poems based on cats' nature, and that of course became the basis for the musical Cats, which is so famous. And that all started with T.S. Eliot's own cat, Jelly Lorum, who is a character mm-hmm. in Cats. And it's just very funny. He's like, you know, Jelly Lorum tries to be useful. He's useful by helping me with the trash because he pulls things out of the trash. And he helps me clean the curtains by, you know, ripping them down. So there's all kinds of personal connections to animals that were really interesting to read about. And just, I mean, so many of us have pets that it mm-hmm. resonates with us.
Now we just watch them on YouTube. But in the old days, we wrote poems and painted them and all kinds of stuff. Soundcheck listeners, lots of art about birds, about cats. But what animal has been underrepresented in art and deserves a musical treatment? You can leave a comment on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck, where you'll find the slideshow of... some of the things at the exhibition called In the Company of Animals at the Morgan, wnyc.org/soundcheck, or give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Again, online, wnyc.org/soundcheck, an animal that's been underrepresented in art and deserves better from a songwriter or a composer somewhere. Again, Clara, you did a lot of research on this. I mean, were you surprised at how many of one animal or how few of another you found?
Well, with music, of course, it's true. The bird, I mean, it makes absolute sense that birds, yeah, I mean, yeah, they actually produce sounds and music. In terms of literature, I have a grasshopper in the show, which I was very, because even if you would call that an animal, there may be some debate. But I have the E.E. Cummings poem.
Who would debate that a grasshopper is not an animal?
Well, I don't know, insect. It's an animal. I have the E.E. Cummings poem Grasshopper, where, you know, he plays with punctuation and the letters of grasshopper are mixed up, and then at the end the grasshopper leaps and it becomes grasshopper. So, and I even have a lizard, a huge 17th century lizard in the show, mm-hmm. a monitor lizard. Those tend to be underrepresented.
I guess a lot of people, you know, when they think of art and animals, especially kids, will think of Peter and the Wolf, the Prokofiev.
I did.
Is that so, ever...
Yeah, I remember playing the record over and over again. It's like one of my earliest childhood musical memories, really being obsessed with it. And I will forever associate French horns represent the wolf. I will basically be terrified every time I hear a French horn. My mother played French horn for a while, which probably adds to my my nervousness around that instrument.
Sorry, Mom. Yeah. We're speaking with Clara Drummond. She is curating In the Company of Animals at the Morgan. And in this scene from Prokofiev's Peter and the Wolf, in the David Bowie narration, the bird and the duck have been discussing exactly what makes a bird, and the cat sees her chance to pounce.
The cat thought, the bird is busy arguing. I'll just grab him. Stealthily, she crept towards him on her velvet paws.
"Look out!" shouted Peter, and the bird immediately flew up into the tree.
Peter and the Wolf, Sergei Prokofiev, and Clara, this is the David Bowie version with Eugene Ormandy and the Philadelphia Orchestra. That's the one that...
That's the one we used in the show for the audio section to listen to.
The show is in the company of animals, showing at the Morgan Library and Museum through May 20th. There's a slideshow of images from the exhibition on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Where Linda asks, is there any music about guinea pigs, sugar gliders? I don't even know what a sugar glider is. Other cute, unusual pocket pets. I think Linda's just making stuff up towards the end of that. But, I mean, you know, little... Like,
yeah.
Are there poems about guinea pigs or hamsters or gerbils or medieval illuminations? Anything?
There are medieval illuminations of everything. We have medieval illuminations of pretzels in our collection, so they're probably. And someone, a woman came in and said she swears that the first dog treat, like, you know, the little bones, she also saw in one of our medieval manuscripts. So I would not be surprised if there are hamsters in some medieval manuscripts.
Now, another surprising thing that comes out of your exhibition or the research into your exhibition, Edgar Allan Poe's raven was almost what?
A parrot.
that just would not have had the same kind of gothic...
Exactly, darkness and foreboding nature. No, we have on view the earliest surviving portion in Poe's hand, so it's in his own handwriting, where he makes some revisions to a stanza of the raven. But he said in an essay about writing that, you know, I needed a bird that could speak, because, you know, the bird says nevermore.
Right.
And, of course, a parrot came to mind, he said. But it was not keeping with the intended tone, so I decided on a raven. Because, imagine if it was called the parrot. It would just not work.
I cannot imagine Lou Reed taking on Edgar Allan Poe's The Parrot. The raven, on the other hand...
Just one epithet I muttered as inside I gagged and shuddered when with manly flirt and flutter in there flew a stately raven. Sleek and ravenous as any foe, not the least obeisance made he, not a minute's gesture toward me of recognition or politeness, but perched above my chamber door, this foul and salivating visage insinuating with its knowledge, perched above my chamber door, silent sat and staring, nothing more. Askance, askew, the self-said fancy smiles at you, I swear, at this savage, vicious countenance it wears. Though you show here, shorn and shaven, and I admit myself forlorn and craven, ghastly grim, an ancient raven wandering from the opiate shores, tell me what thy lordly name is, that you are not nightmare sewage, some dire powder drink or inhalation framed from flames of downtown lore. Quoth the raven, nevermore.
So that is The Raven, as Edgar Allan Poe ultimately ended up writing it, thinking better of The Parrot.
Right.
Lou Reed is one of many people who's sort of taken a crack at that. I'm not sure who the narrator there was. Might sound a little bit like Willem Dafoe, but who knows. But anyway, so we're talking about animals and the arts. It's the subject of Clara Drummond's exhibition at the Morgan called In the Company of Animals. And we've put out the question, you know, what animals are underrepresented in the arts? And we've got a couple of answers. And Darren is joining us on the line from Astoria, Queens. Hi, Darren.
Hey, John. How are you?
Okay. What animal is not getting the love it deserves?
Well, definitely the platypus, without any question. It's just the funkiest animal on the face of the planet.
Now, it's got
a lot going on. It's just, you know, you could take so many different avenues for inspiration. It's confused about its identity. It doesn't know if it's a duck one moment or an aquatic bird or a land-roving, poisonous claw-wielding,
right,
dangerous beast. And so, you know, I can really see a lot of a lot of inspiration for artists from this one animal.
And what genre would this be? Would you want to hear a song, a poem, see a painting? What would your...
I think Paul McCartney would be the best one to take this. If, you know, we try to do it on the next album project, which I'm sure is going to be coming out in the next 2 or 3 months at the rate he's putting out stuff now. But I'm thinking, you know, like sort of a Live and Let Die or a Band on the Run, where he's got, you know, 4 songs rolled into one. And, you know, each portion of the song, we have like the beak movement at the intro, and then we'll have the flipper claw movement in the center, and the, you know, the poisonous spur attack at the very end, and just all kinds of fun avenues Paul could take with this.
Darren, how long have you been thinking about this? I mean, you've got this all figured out. You should go and write this piece.
Well, you know, I am the leader of the Platypus Association here in Astoria, and we haven't actually found any local specimens, but we're always on the lookout for them.
Right.
So if you do see any, I can give you our hotline number later to call in and report sighting.
All right, Darren, we'll take you up on that later. Darren calling in from Astoria, Queens. Kathy, on our website is suggesting dolphins and points out that the Maori in New Zealand supposedly wait by the shore to hear their song. Now, dolphins, there is some ancient art, like Alexandria.
Yeah, you know. Representations of dolphins. And I mean, I guess that they also, you know, make these, I mean, I've actually never heard dolphins. You know, they have that very high pitch, but you know, when they record their sounds, they're captivating. So,
Pete from Greenpoint, Pete writes, krill gets my vote. I guess Pete is a baleen whale.
Yeah, you could do the movement of krill. There's something that can be done with krill, I think.
That sounds like one
Moby
Dick, John Cage or something turn that into a work of art. Wayne is on the line with us from Brooklyn Heights. Wayne, welcome to Soundcheck.
Great show as usual. I wanted to talk about the terrible stereotypes of wolves in Prokofiev's Peter and the Wolf, and also in Little Red Riding Hood. These stereotypes of this shy, magnificent animal have really caused tremendous persecution of the wolf throughout history and perpetuate this horrible negative stereotype. So with all due respect to all the joy and the positiveness of this wonderful show, Peter and the Wolf is just a brutal example of how wolves get stereotyped and the power of literature and music to perpetuate these stereotypes.
That's absolutely, you know, that's right.
Yeah,
I mean, one of the great things about art is that it has that power, and of course,
that
can also be turned around.
It's a great point because it actually shows, it's very true what you say. It's not so much about representing the nature of the wolf. It's really, again, about a human, you know, unfounded fear, you know, sort of mythology of the wolf that then is taken up and perpetuated. And I think that's right. It's actually, that representation is more about humans' reaction to the wolf rather than anything about wolf's nature.
Have you come across anything that puts the wolf in a positive, is there a Blake poem that we don't know about or something, you know, that sort of elevates the wolf? I mean, Paul Winter, the sax player, is a big fan of wolves and has used wolf songs and wolf calls in his own piece.
Right. You know, I can't think of anything. I mean, there tend to be more natural history depictions there of wolves, which are just meant to be more didactic, you know, just describing rather than reading all these human sort of emotions and actions into, you know, that the wolf is somehow, you know, ravenous. Of course, it's not ravenous. It's just, it's a wolf and it needs to eat. So, yeah.
All right.
We need some positive wolf representations.
The exhibition is called In the Company of Animals. It is showing at the Morgan Library and Museum through May 20th. There is a slideshow of images from the exhibition on our Soundcheck webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Animals, the subject of what I feel is a very underrated Pink Floyd album, so we'll hear a little bit of that in the background. Clara Drummond is the curator of the exhibition In the Company of Animals. Clara, thanks for being with us today.
That's great. Thank you.
This is Soundcheck. Up next, new releases we think you just might go wild for in this week's Pick 3. And later, for opera singer Thomas Hampson, murder, ghosts, and madness are all part of a day's work. We'll talk with the baritone here in the Soundcheck studio.